Glod was in full flow. Dwarfs were said to be the keenest of financial negotiators, second only in acumen and effrontery to little old ladies. Imp tried to pay attention to what was going on. "Right then," Glod was saying. "It's a deal, yes?"
"A deal," said the little old lady. "And don't go spitting on your hand before we shake. That sort of thing's unhygienic."
Glod turned to Imp.
"I think I handled that pretty well," he said.
"Glod, listen, this is a very..."
"Got $12?
"What?"
"Something of a bargain, I think."
There was a thump behind them. Leas appeared, rolling a very large drum and carrying a couple of cymbals under his arm.
"I said I'd got no money," Imp hissed.
"Yes, but, well, everyone says they've got no money. That's sense. You don't want to go around saying you've got money. You mean you've really got no money?"
"No."
"Not even $12?
"No."
Leas dumped the drum, the cymbals and a pile of sheet music on the counter.
"How much for everything?" he said.
$15, said the old woman.
Leas sighed and straightened up. There was a distant look in his eyes for a moment, and then he hit himself on the jaw. He fumbled around inside his mouth with a finger, and then produced... Imp stared.
"Here, let me have a look," said Glod.
He snatched the thing from Leas's unprotesting fingers and examined it carefully.
"Hey, 50 carats at least."
"I'm not taking that," said the old woman. "It's been in the troll's mouth."
"You eat eggs, don't you?" said Glod. "Anyway, everyone knows troll's teeth are pure diamond."
The old woman took the tooth and examined it by candlelight.
"If I took it along to one of those jewellers in Nonsuch Street, they'd tell me it's worth $200, said Glod.
"Well, I'm telling you it's worth 15 right here," said the old lady.
The diamond magically disappeared somewhere about her person. She gave them a bright, fresh smile.
"Why couldn't we just take it off her?" said Glod when they were outside.
"Because she's a poor, defenceless old woman," said Imp.
"Exactly! My point exactly!"
Glod looked up at Leas.
"You got a whole mouth full of them things?"
"Yep."
"Only I owe my landlord 2 months' rent."
"Don't even think about it," said the troll, levelly.
Behind them, the door slammed shut.
"Look, cheer up," said Glod. "Tomorrow I'll find us a gig. Don't worry. I know everyone in this city." "Three of us. That's a band."
"We haven't even practiced together properly," said Imp.
"We'll practice as we go along," said Glod. "Welcome to the world of professional musicianship."
Susan did not know much about history. It always seemed a particularly dull subject. The same stupid things were done over and over again by tedious people. What was the point? One king was pretty much like another. The class was learning about some revolt in which some peasants had wanted to stop being peasants, and since the nobles had won, had stopped being peasants really quickly. Had they bothered to learn to read and acquire some history books, they'd have learnt about the uncertain merits of things like scythes and pitchforks when used in battle against crossbows and broadswords. She listened half-heartedly for a while until boredom set in, and then took out a book and let herself fade from the notice of the world.
"Squeak!"
Susan glanced sideways. There was a tiny figure on the floor by her desk. It looked very much like a rat skeleton in a black robe, holding a very small scythe. Susan looked back at her book. Such things did not exist. She was quite certain about that.
"Squeak!"
Susan looked down again. The apparition was still there. There had been cheese on toast for supper the previous night. In books, at least, you were supposed to expect things after a late-night meal like that.
"You don't exist," she said. "You're just a piece of cheese."
"Squeak?"
When the creature was sure it had got her full attention, it pulled out a tiny hourglass on a silver chain and pointed at it urgently. Against all rational considerations, Susan reached down and opened her hand. The thing climbed onto it, its feet felt like pins, and looked at her expectantly. Susan lifted it up to eye level. All right. Perhaps it was a figment of her imagination. She ought to take it seriously.
"You're not going to say something like, 'Oh, my paws and whiskers,' are you?" she said quietly. "If you do, I shall go and drop you in the privy."
The rat shook its skull. And you're real?
Squeak, 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 squeak.
Look, I don't understand, said Susan patiently. I don't speak rodent. We only do Clatchian in modern languages, and I only know how to say, my aunt's camel has fallen in the mirage. And if you are imaginary, you might try to be a bit more lovable. A skeleton, even a small one, is not a naturally lovable object, even if it has got an open countenance and a grin. But the feeling, no, she realized the memory, was creeping over her from somewhere that this one was not only real but on her side. It was an unfamiliar concept. Her side had normally consisted of her. The late rat regarded Susan for a moment, and then in one movement gripped the tiny scythe between its teeth and sprang off Susan's hand, landed on the classroom floor, and scuttled away between the desks. "It's not even as if you've got paws and whiskers," said Susan. "Not proper ones, anyway." The skeletal rat stepped through the wall. Susan turned back to her book and ferociously read Noxuse's Divisibility Paradox, which demonstrated the impossibility of falling off a log.
End of CD 1.